Okay, I want to, for a moment, pick up where we left off with the Gra, because I want to make a methodological point here. According to the majority of Rishonim, there is actually a machloket in our Gemara as to the authorship of the final 8 psukim of the Torah. Right?
Right.
Right. If we remember yesterday, the Gra claims that when the Gemara says upliga, it doesn't quite mean pliga. It's not really an argument. Right? They're just sort of taking it from different angles. Right? They're taking it from different angles. Right? If you look back at the Gra, and he says, right, at the end, v'imkena shnei adeot lo pligi ki ve'emet ketavan Moshe. Right, these positions aren't really arguing, because really, Moshe wrote them. V'lo chaser afil orachat, and therefore they both agree that the Torah wasn't missing a letter. Rak kichet psukim elu lo hayachol lichtovet enigle v'yatzervim v'zeu b'dema. It's just that it couldn't be written in the revealed manner, so it was written.
Meaning that he dictated it to himself before he read it?
He wrote it in the invisible ink, remember, with tears, etc.
Right, yeah.
Now, I want to pick up on that for a moment, because what drives the Gra to do that? What do you think drives the Gra to claim that despite the fact that the Gemara presents this as a dispute, as a machloket, he understands this not as a machloket? What drives him to say such a thing?
The fact that they make it sound like the Torah is complete.
But the Gemara presents as a machloket. Why does it bother him to say there's a machloket? And he reinterprets pliga, right? And they are arguing to say they're not really arguing. They both agree that Moshe wrote it in some sense. Right? Why does he do that? It's a really hard read, because remember, the Gemara presents this as a machloket with potential halachic implications. It's quite hard to read this as a non-machloket. Why would you do that?
The argument is that Moshe did it in some way.
No, why does the Gra argue that there is no machloket? Then they both agree that Moshe sort of wrote it. Right? Why does he do that? The Gemara presents it in machloket. Why does he not want to believe that there was even a dispute about this?
Because...
Yeah, Daniel. Yeah, I'm going to guess that that's true, right? To put it even, yeah, right? Because Moshe gave the Torah, and one of these positions seems to think not that way. To broaden that a little bit, there is a passage in the Michtav Meliyahu by Ray Dessler, which I don't agree with, but I'm going to put it out there to explain why I don't agree with it. He writes as follows. He's commenting on a different Agadat and Brachot, and he says, "V'hinei be'emet lo shayach machloket ela b'dvar halacha." In truth, there can only be real disputes about halacha. Uvazerach b'nogel ma'aseh. And even within halacha, it's not about like fundamentals, like is there a mitzvah of tefillin or not, but like on details, on how do you practice this? Eich la'asot. Aval be'etzim tochan ha'inyan lo shayach machloket. But there cannot be disputes about the fundamentals of things. Nor can there ever be a machloket on agadata. Now, what drives him to say that? Because I think it's the same that drives the Gra here. And then let's figure out the opposite of it for a moment. Right? What drives Rav Dessler to say that? Why does Rav Dessler want to believe that there's no such thing as a machloket in agadata? And no real machloket about fundamentals in halacha? There is.
One story.
Yeah, right? Meaning halacha, to say there's machlok in halacha, like, we both agree there's tefillin, but we have, like, you know, Rashi Rabbeinu Tam, fine, like, well, you know, what? How do you put the parshio? That doesn't shake your emuna, because we both basically follow the same Judaism, right? We believe the same basic things, we believe in the same basic mitzvot, but like, whatever, you know, I think you do it a little bit this way. What's the worst that'll happen? Right, after 120, you'll go to Shemayim, and God will say, you know what, you put on tefillin, but like, you missed a detail, so like, okay, you know, maybe you didn't fulfill the mitzvah, but like, we were following the same Judaism, you made some mistakes along the way, but big deal, right? But what's the problem with saying that what does Agadata reflect? Agadata reflects stories, in some cases, fundamentals of faith. Right? Like this one. Did Moshe write the whole Torah or not? Right? What hangs on that? If you say there's a machloket, really, really a machloket, what does that mean?
That there are halachic implications.
No. What does it mean? There's a real machloket. Like, what is that?
There's a problem with Moshe didn't finish the Torah.
It's more than that. It means that, right? Well, let's take something radical, right? Let's.
It's not necessarily from.
Yeah, meaning what it, right? It would be like saying this, right? There are positions very, 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 very. Not mainstream positions, but there are in fact several positions within Jewish thought that believe that there is no free will. Okay? What hangs on the existence of that machloket? Like what happens? Yeah. Yeah, everything, right? Literally everything, right? What is the value of what I do in this, in my life, right? To say there's a machloket about that is not to say, like, yeah, we basically follow the same Judaism, but like, okay, you put on tefillin a little bit differently, right? You wait 3 hours, and I wait 6 hours, and I wait 1 hour after, like, milk and meat. Like, big deal, right? To say there is a machloket about whether there's free will is to say that there are two traditions within Judaism that view Judaism in totally different ways, and that after 120 you might die, go up to Shemaim and find out that what you thought Judaism was, it was not. Right? That is a scary thought. Right? When Rav Dessler says there cannot be machloket in Agadata, right? In like fundamentals of faith, or about fundamentals of mitzvot, only on like details of halacha, what drives him to say that? Right, is he cannot swallow the possibility that there is a machloket, which the outcome of it will mean that you are keeping two different Judaisms. Right, like that isn't possible for him. Right? Okay? Yeah.
Maybe, well, if you read him, it's like different times. There can't be versus, he's saying there can't be as... If there is some issue, we have to figure out. We have to find out what the right.
No, so that's not what he says, right? He says that even when it appears like there's a machloket in the Gemara, it's not. Like what the Grud did here, right? It looks like a machloket, but it's not true. Not like we have to resolve it so that we will follow the same Judaism. Like, there was never a machloket. Right? Because he can't swallow the possibility that name your Tana, name your Amora, that they followed a different Judaism. Not like a different detail, but like a different religion. Right? I don't know if that's maybe a bit strong. But almost. Right? But, and the Grud, at least in this instance, seems to be going that direction. Right? There can't really be a machloket. Everyone has to agree that the Torah was given by Moshe. Right? Like that. No one really disagrees with that. Right? That's what the Grud is saying. Right? No one really disagrees. Okay, how do you view the fact that it was written in disappearing ink? Fine, a technicality. But like, there can't really be a machloket. Really? About whether the Moshe wrote the whole Torah or not? Right? Like, either he did or he didn't. Right? You can't, right? The Torah is either all from Moshe or it's not. Right? He can't buy that. But here's now the contrast, right? And you know, every so often I'll throw these things in and, you know, realize the weight of this, right? The fact that none of the Rishonim said that means that they were okay with that. Right? They were okay with the possibility that there's a machloket about, like, who wrote the Torah. Not all of it, admittedly, right? But, like, they were okay with the possibility that there were two traditions within Chazal about who wrote the end of the Torah, right? They didn't shy away from that.
Ah, those last eight lines are not giving you a lot, it's just kind of like a little recap of how Moshe died.
Good. Right, so you'll say, well, maybe they're okay because it's just these eight. And that's what I want you to hold in mind for probably maybe tomorrow, maybe 2 days, depending on how fast we go today, where you realize it could be, right? Or it could not be. Because you will see that, as I mentioned, Ibn Ezra will take this just a little bit more, right? But there are people, there are Rishonim, Rabbi Dachas and others, who... Eight psukim are only the beginning of your problems, right? They are comfortable with a very different view of the Torah, in which large swaths of the Torah, right, are larger swaths of the Torah are not written by Moshe, and pieces of the Torah were cut out and put other places in Tanakh, right? They're okay with that, right? We'll get to it, right? But I just want to point out now, right, that the fact that most of the Rishonim don't go the direction of the Grah, where they basically get rid of the Machloket, but they recognize the Machloket, means that they are okay with the possibility of Machloket about things that matter. Right? That's what I want to point out. How much? Right? At some point, there can't be machloket of everything. Right? There can't be machloket of is there God or not, whether matan Torah or not. Right? There are certain things that, you know, yesh gvul. But there is a possibility that there is a machloket about things that really, really matter. Okay? Now, that is a scary thought. I just want to put that out. Right? That is not... That is something that, if you really think about it, should make you a bit uncomfortable. Right? It might also be comforting. Right? But it should also make you a bit uncomfortable. Right? Because, like... You know, people like sort of papering over differences. Like, yeah, we all basically follow the same religion, do the same thing, right? Right, we're all Jews. The differences are only superficial, which is true a lot of the time, but it's not always true, right? There are, in fact, very different views of the world within the Jewish tradition that if you follow one or the other, the way you live your life and what you think your life is supposed to look like will be very, very different, right? And both of those may find sources in the tradition. It's not like I can come down firmly on one side or the other. Okay. Now let's get back to our sugya. So now the non-controversial part of our sugya, right? The less radical part of our sugya. I mean, controversial in the sense there is a controversy about it, but not like one that like keeps you up at night in the same way, right? Okay. So again, the Gemara then originally hung the halachic implications of our Gemara on the question of authorship and then rejected it and said, in the end of the day, the halachic implications of Yachid Koreotam is independent of the authorship question because everyone agrees the last eight psukim are different. Is that a fair summary of where we are in the sugya? Good. Now to the halachic claim. What the heck does Yachid Koreotam mean? Right? The eight psukim are different and therefore Yachid Koreotam. What does that mean? And in each position, right, try to justify it conceptually, right? Okay, good. So let's start. Someone throw out a position and put a name to it. We'll go in that order. Yeah, Darius.
One person has to read it start to finish without breaking.
Good. Who thinks that? Name me. Okay, good. So let's read. You want to take the Rashi and read it? Yachid Koreotam, yeah. Right, so Rashi says, Yachid Koreotam means read it as one aliyah, not two, right? Don't make hosafot. Right? Don't make hosafot. Right? Right, for those who don't know, because not everyone in their shul does it, it probably depends on the size of your shul. Yes, in the Bayit, we do this all the time. You have 803 member families, right? There are multiple simchas, right? You often have to make extra aliyot, as Daniel mentioned during Chavrusa. This is just a reality, right? We got to do this, and you'll get to go to shul, and it'll be frustrating. There won't be seven aliyot, there'll be 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, whatever, so that every bar mitzvah boy and every ufruf and every yurtzeit and every everything, everyone can get aliyot, so you add a million aliyot, and the longer the parasha, the longer that happens, right? And, you know, as long as an aliyah has more than three psukim, you can keep doing this. So, you know, on a nice week of Matos Masei, you can get a good 80 aliyot in there if you really, 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 really want to. No one ever wants to. But you can do that. But you can't do that for the last episode of the Torah. It has to be read as a single aliyah. Now, let's take Rashi at every level. Linguistically, how does Rashi read the word yachid? Right? What does he think? How does he read that phrase? The word yachid means? Right, Adam Echad. Meaning, right? He reads, yachid means an individual, and he reads that to mean a single person. Koreotan, meaning to the exclusion of more than one person reading it. Okay, that's just grammatically how he got to that position. Yachid Koreotan, only one person reads it. Why? Right? Justify it now conceptually. What does Rashi think is going on? Why?
Okay, my next question.
Be careful. Be very careful. Yeah, keep going, but be careful. Yeah.
They can't be interrupted the way you can interrupt the rest.
So let's try that, okay? They are different. And therefore, well, since you know some of the other sheets in the Rishonim, if the eight psukim are different, so you might want to distinguish them from what? The rest of the Torah. Does Rashi say that? No, right? He doesn't want them to be split up from each other, right? He doesn't weigh in on whether they can be split up, right? Whether they can be read with the rest of the Torah or not, right? He just thinks you can't break them up, right? That's different, right? So now let's try to justify that, right? It's not that, right? Meaning there are two things, right? Is does Ra, right? Other Rishonim say he can't be read with the rest of the Torah, right? Meaning you have to make a new aliyah of the last eight. He doesn't say that. He just says that the last aliyah can't, the last eight psukim can't be broken into more than one aliyah, right? So why would you say that? Right? You only need half of what you said, right? It's, right? Meaning the fact that they are distinct from the rest of the Torah, so I could say, fine, so don't read it with the rest of the Torah, but that doesn't mean they have to be read together, right? I could take the last eight psukim and make two aliyot as long as sever the rest of the Torah, but that's not what Rashi says, that they have to be read together. So what do you have to say to justify that? By the way, no one should feel like embarrassed or anything. Like, I'm going to push you to be very precise conceptually, right? And I expect that it will take several stages to push, right? Yeah, so what would justify this? Let's think it out together, right? What is justifies Rashi? Right? What is Rashi really saying? He's not saying it's just about the distinction of the rest of the Torah, because that would tell us that it should be read separately from the rest of the Torah, but maybe in two units. Meaning, right? It's the uniqueness. Let's try it again. Right? The uniqueness. Yeah, right. I think that's right. For Rashi, that's the emphasis. It's not the distinction from the rest of the Torah that's important for Rashi, right? It's that the fact that these are written this way make them their own unit, right? Meaning they become, right? There's something about the fact that this was the unit written by either Yehoshua or Moshe Bedema that means they can't be split from each other, right? Meaning the rest of the Torah, as it were, every 3-4 psukim has a theme and therefore could be its own aliyah if you wanted it to be. But the last 8 psukim, right, it's like to imagine it, right? You can take, there are certain conversations you want to do in one shot, right? And certain that don't matter, right? Like, I don't know, let's think of a good example, right? If we're just like planning, I don't know, something practical, right? We're like dividing up chores in the apartments, right? So like, it's not the biggest deal, right? If like, you get an interruption in the middle of the conversation, right? We're like, we're talking about it, you're gonna, you know, you'll help with the sweeping, you'll clean up the thing, and if someone calls you in the middle, right, you'll be like, you know, okay, just give me a second, I just need to answer the phone call, and like, what hangs on that? I don't know, like, whatever. So like, you'll talk about one chore now and another in like 30 seconds or a minute, right? Let's say you were, God forbid, but to sort of keep the context of the psukim, you just found out that a loved one died and you are now conveying this to another member of the family, right? You found out, you know, I don't know, a grandparent passed away and you have to tell this to your sibling, right? And you're in the middle of saying this and your phone rings. What do you do at that point? You ignore the phone call, right? There are certain things that by nature of that they are, right? Finish the message before you do anything else, right? That's what Rashi is saying. Is the last eight psukim, right, essentially are a eulogy for Moshe, right? Right? You wouldn't want someone picking up their phone in the middle of a eulogy, in the middle, right, at a funeral, right? This is not what you do, right? The fact that these essays psukim are either written by Moshe Bedem or written by Yehoshua as a, right, as a close to the Torah, a final speech, a final tribute to Moshe, whatever it is, it's not that it makes it distinct from the rest of the Torah. It means that this speech must hang together, right, and therefore cannot be split. That's what Rashi thinks. Good. Give me another model now. But now, conceptually, what for Rashi, the issue under discussion is not the distinction of these eight psukim from the rest of the Torah, is the connection of the eight psukim to each other, right? Now, give me another model, right? Give me a different conceptual model.
The Rambam says that you know, you can read these psukim without opinion.
Good. So therefore what?
So...
Yeah, actually, you know what? Let's hold the Rambam. You're 100% right. But let's take the flip of Rashi for a moment. Right? Someone give me the flip of Rashi. Right? Rashi says that this is about the connection of the eight psukim to each other. Who says what Darius said originally? Which was that the issue at hand is the connection between these eight psukim and the rest of the Torah. Right? Who says that?
Why do they both argue? Why would that be an argument?
Who said that? I don't. Who said that? There are names to that. So this, don't ask me why. First, tell me who.
The guys in the Gemara.
No. The guys in the Gemara. I mean, halachically, yachid karei adam. What's the other halachic position that reflects the first half of what Darius said? Right. Darius swallowed two different positions, both of which were correct, but they were not one. Right. One is that the yachid karei adam tells you there's something unique about the way these psukim relate to each other. Possibly two is that they're unique about the way they relate to the rest of the Torah, which Darius is right, is probably a better read of the Gemara, because the issue at hand is how are these psukim different from the rest of the Torah, not how they connected to each other. So, I agree with Darius. The pashut pshat would be that you're looking for Yachid Karei Otam to be about how are these psukim not connected to each other, but different from the rest of the Torah. Now, who gives you the simplest halachic position that reflects that sort of straightforward read? Gavi is one of them, right? The Rambam. But hold that thought for a second. Who says this? Give me another position. Right? There were like five sheets on Rishonim. Right? Give me any of the Rishonim. The Shita Mekubetzet. Right? The Shita Mekubetzet, remember, has two possibilities. One is Rashi, that once you have these eight psukim, you can't divide them in two. But what's the other one? This is on page two, right? Ole echad korei psukim elu bifnei atzmo. They have to be read by themselves. Kidei she'en ikar shlo katavan Moshe el Yoshua. To make it clear that they were not written by Moshe. Right? They were not written by Moshe, meaning the other position Shimon Gubet said is that the halach of Yachid Korei Otam means that you have to stop the previous aliyah at the last eight psukim, so that no one thinks that these psukim are like the rest of the Torah. Yeah, Dov.
Doesn't this assume that Yeshua wrote that?
Well, this is presumably in that Havamina. The Maskana is that, no, Moshe wrote it, but it's still different than the rest of the Torah, because Moshe Katvan Vedeva. So either that Yoshua wrote it, or that Moshe wrote it Vedeva. But yes, in the Havamina, this hangs on Yoshua. The Maskana, it doesn't. It hangs on there being different. Right? But those are two different positions, right? The Shidum Gubetz is telling you. One way of understanding Yachid Korei Otam is, it's about the connection of the Pesukim to each other. The other is, the issue at hand is, their difference from the rest of the Torah. Right, the way he manifests it is that you don't read the last eight psukim as part of a longer aliyah that includes some psukim that are written either by Moshe not Bidema or by Moshe Bechlal, with those that were written by Moshe Bidema or Yehoshua. By the way, is that our minhag? That interpretation? Anyone remember how we lane? Yeah, thank you. We don't start the Aliyah at Vayamat Shem Moshe, right? That's not where we start the Aliyah, right?
We start before.
What? No, thank you. Right? Guys, come on. Simchas Torah. You hear this laning over and over and over and over again. You should know that we don't start an Aliyah at Vayamat Shem Moshe Isha, right? Isha Elohim. We start before. No, not like Adam.
We don't break.
Correct. We don't break them up, but we don't read them separate. Yes. Come on, you guys don't remember like the Valkari getting up there and saying Mona like Chasen Torah.
It's almost been a year.
I can barely hear anything.
What?
I can barely hear anything in Shul. With all the things going on.
Wonderful.
With all the Ulishir Amars being said over and over and over and over.
Anyways, good.
Like
okay, now,
going on in
Gavi.
Every corner
Gavi has the Rambam, so let's go to the Rambam for a moment. The Rambam, conceptually, says something totally radically different, right? What the Rambam takes a third position, right? What does he say, right? The first two positions are Yachid Koreotan means that a single person reads the Holy Aliyah because in some way this is an atomic unit. Possibility two is that the issue at hand is figuring out in what way the Sukkim are related to the rest of the Torah, right? The Rambam, right now, both of these Shito, though, are about what? Right? They're merely about recognizing difference, right? Right? It's difference, right? These two positions are opposites, but they're both within just saying that the last eight Pesukim are different. The Rambam goes farther. It's not just the last eight Pesukim are different. What are they? Yeah, lesser, right? Meaning the first two positions say they're different. They're not necessarily lesser. They're just different, right? Right. Therefore, they have to maintain difference either from the rest of the Torah or they can't be split so that they hold together. The Rambam's position is that no, Yachid Koreotam means that these Pesukim are on some level lower. So how does he interpret it? What does he think Yachid Koreotam means?
That, you know, a Yachid can read it even without...
Correct. Right? Without a Tzibur. Right? So Rashi thinks the word Yachid means one person. Right? The Shidim Gwetzes thinks Yachid means an individual who did not read the Pesukim prior. Right? The Rambam thinks Yachid, in this case, is not the opposite, does not mean one. What does it mean? It means, right, a non-tzibur, right? A private person rather than a community. Right? So the Rambam says, right, the rest of the Torah must be read by a minyan. And this one does not have to be read by a minyan. Now, the Ravid challenges him on two grounds. What are the two grounds? Meaning, no, it has to be read, but it doesn't need a minyan.
So one guy can walk out.
Oh, good. So Darius asks what the Ravid asks, right? The Ravid asks two questions, right? What are the Ravid's two questions? Gavi.
Why? First of all, why is there a lesser minyan?
Good. Why? Well, which one did you say? I think you said the second one, okay? Right? One is why. Why is that okay? And the other is? What happened to the minyan? Right? Practically. Really? Right? Now, as I was said to several people in Chavrusa, that is a really, no offense to the Ravid, that is a terrible, I mean, the Ravid is much firmer than our shul. Okay? The Ravid could not understand how you had 10 people there for the beginning of laning, and by the time you got to the end of the Torah, there was not a minyan. Okay? Anybody, ever been in shul on Simchas Torah, where they're doing the reading over and over and over again, and can any of you understand, explain to me practically, how while there's a Kiddush in the other room, for the people who've already had their aliyah, right? How it might be that 10 people might not be left by the time you get to the Torah, right? You can all imagine for yourself, right? We've all been there. Yes.
Do the huge before.
Seriously, like, have you never been? I think every minyan I've ever gone to on Simchas Torah, they announce, please, even after you've gotten your aliyah, stay so that we have a minyan around the table so that we can continue our aliyah, right? Does this not happen in every shul? Maybe it's because I only grew up in big shuls, right? Okay, so in a small shul, they don't have to say this. In a big shul, everyone's like, oh yeah, they'll do it. Right? Someone else will be there, I can go eat, right? So what we can derive from this is the Ravid was very frum, and everybody in his shul was really frum, right? Good for the Ravid. By the way, So the truth is that the Ravid, it's probably true. What I just said is probably not even facetious, it's probably true. Where did the Ravid live? Where's the Ravid from?
Europe.
France. Where in France?
Wait, was he from France?
Where in France? He's from southern France, an area which is really distinct from the rest of France, known as Provence. But he's from a very specific city. So the two major cities in Provence in southern France were Narbonne and Lunel, which mean? They mean the sun and the moon.
Actually,
right?
I was thinking.
Right? Sun and moon. Right? That's why all Provençal Rishonim, their nicknames have to do with light. Like the Mi'iri, right? The Baal HaMa'or, right? And the Baal HaMa'or's name is, by the way, what? His first name is Zerachia, right? Which just means Zerach, yes. The shining, right? The shining of God, right? Everybody there likes light. The Baal HaMa'orot, all their names, all their books are about names. The exception is the Ravid. The Ravid lives in a different city. He lives in, like all the major Rishonim in Provence, live in either Narbonne or Lunel, and some of them live on the mountain in Montpellier, right? But he lives in none of those. And he lives in Poskiers. He lives in Poskiers. Why does the Ravid live where nobody else lives?
He doesn't mean the name.
No, no. Because he's rich. Because he is rich. That's why. The Ravid is rich. Right? The Ravid is so rich, in fact, that he has a huge estate and he just brings people to live on his big estate in Poskier, so he doesn't need to live near anybody else. He brings people to live there. So, for all I know, he brought a very firm minion, and that's the only people who are allowed to live on his estate, right, and learn Torah with him, right? That's probably why his shul was so firm. That's just my guess. But yes, that's why he lives in Poskiers. He's rich. That's often the answer to a lot of these questions. Why does someone live on some estate where no one else lives? Because he's rich. Okay? Fine.
But was it a city?
I know, it is a city, but his estate was not where the rest of the Jewish community was. But he had people living there on his estate, apparently. I don't know the exact details, but yes, he's apparently rich and lives away from everybody else.
Rabbis back then were only as big as their wallets.
What?
Rabbis back then were only as big as their wallets.
No. No. That's not true. I mean, Ravid is... Anyways, fine. So, the practical question, the Ravid really doesn't bother me. Like, where did the minion go? I don't know. They went to Kiddush Club. I don't know. Okay, but they're not there. But let's justify now the Rambam's position. What does the Rambam think?
When did he live?
The Ravid? He is... Exact years, I don't know. He is the 11th century. Right? No, he's 12th century, right? The Rambam is 1140 to 1205, 1204, 1205. The Ravid is slightly before. Right? Like, the Ravid overlaps the Rambam, is a little bit older. So, he sees the Rambam towards the end of his life. So he's somewhere... You could look it up, I'm sure, on Wikipedia, but somewhere in the 12th century in southern France. Okay, who's his arch nemesis, by the way? Yeah. Not really the Rambam. The Rambam is like, he like comments on the Rambam. The person he really hates is Reb Zerachya Halevi, the Baal Mor. Right, that's who he like really, really doesn't like. What? Why? As the legend goes, they both wanted to marry the same girl, and the Ravid won. And for the rest of their life, they hated each other. They both wanted to marry the daughter of the Baal HaEshkol, who was the other Ravid, right? Rav Avram Beit Din, Baal HaEshkol. And that's why Rav Lichtenstein once said that, you know, most rabbis, it sounds like their machloket is not personal, but when you read the Ravid and the Baal HaMor, it does not feel that way. Which is true, right? You read the Ravid doesn't say, like, about the Baal HaMor, you're wrong. He says things like, to quote, right? What he wrote is a basket full of lies, right? Things like that, right? He's not nice to the Baal HaMor. Okay, people are complex. What do you want from my life, right? I don't know. Have an ongoing machloket about a girl. See how civil you stay. I don't know, right? I don't know. Okay, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you, right? I could be getting my facts wrong, someone, but I believe that is. Anyways, the truth, the fact remains that when you read it, their language to each other is very, very, very harsh. Okay, fine. Justify the Rambam's position for me now. Justify the Rambam. So? Yeah. And therefore you don't need a minion? And remember, in the end of the day, the Gemara says Moshe did write it, so you don't need a minion. Or might have wrote it.
Whatever Moshe wrote from Hashem, Yeshua, best case scenario, tracing what Moshe wrote.
Okay, so why does that mean no minion? Maybe, but he's not saying you dafka don't do a minion, just you don't need a minion. Right? Okay, so you could just say, well, it's a lower level. What do you want from my life? So you don't need a minion.
Why do we need a minion to read the Torah?
So good. So I think that if you really want to answer the question, you have to answer the question that Darius said, which is, why does one need a minion ever? Right? Why? So why do you need it? God didn't say so. It's not. This is not Del Rey, so. So, right. So let's give several different versions of what we're about to say, right? We need a minyan in general whenever we need a community, right? That's what it is. It's a community, right? Just on that level, why might you not need a minyan for these psukim? You do have the mitzvah to read them. You just don't need a minyan.
Wait, we're saying, why?
Why? Think about it. So why? But why? Not. Yes, I know the Gemara says it. Why?
On the contrary, because it's a funeral. It's like a funeral.
Well, we do read them in shul, though. But just, we don't need a minyan. You can have a minyan, but we don't need one. Why? You do. Right, all that, you do, right? I mean, the Rambam is saying quite something striking, right? You have an aliyah, but without a minyan. Why? Maybe.
Maybe they just mean without attention. Meaning.
So I would push a little bit, right? Salvechik develops an idea which I think will be helpful, right? That Kriyat HaTorah is meant to mimic Matan Torah, right? That we read the Torah, right? It's an experience of Matan Torah, right? Now, most of the Torah was taught communally, except for the last 8 psukim, which were either written by Moshe in private crying, or written by Yeshua, but either way, what were they not done? Right? What was not done? Moshe didn't teach them publicly, right? Ben kach u ben kach. So I would suggest, maybe that the Rambam's getting at, is that if we need a minyan, because this is mimicking how the Torah was originally given in the communal context, the last 8 psukim to mimic them, you don't need it. They were written quietly, in silence, either with a crying Moshe, or with Yeshua, you know, sort of like filling out the Torah during Yimei Evil Moshe. Right? So I wonder whether that's what the Rambam's getting at. Right? Is the reason you don't need a minyan is because Kriyas HaTorah is always mimicking the way in which the Torah was given originally, and these 8 psukim, however you understand it, were given differently. Okay, that's 3 positions, right? As a single aliyah, set up off from the rest of the Torah, or without a minyan, right? Rambam, Rashi, Shidim Mubetzet, yeah, Darius.
So, doesn't that mean if you say it's about teaching it communally the way that the Torah was originally given, wouldn't that also mean that Kesuvim don't need to be read communally because those are written down for future generations?
Good. How many examples do we have of actual obligations to read Kesuvim? And? That's it. Right? That's it, right? Esther, correct. The rest of them are not, right? The rest of them are, meaning, are later minhagim, right? But there's no obligation to hear the rest of them the way there is with Esther. And by the way, what does the Gemara call the reading of Megillah's Esther in Megillah Dav Gimel? Bittul Torah. Yes. Right? The Gemara says, in what context? The Gemara says, Mivatlin Torah. Right, that if someone is learning Torah, he can stop learning Torah to read Esther. Now, what does that tell you? It's not Torah, meaning it's not Torah, right? It is what it is, right? Ksuvim, it's valuable. But clearly the point is that, yeah, Kriyas Ksuvim is a different category. It's not the same as Kriyas HaTorah, right? And the Haftorah is the same, right? It's different than reading the Torah. It is also a public reading, but it is not the same as Kriyas HaTorah. It's a different experience, right? It's a different halacha, it's a different category. Okay. Now, that's 3 positions. Now, I don't want to read every Rishon that said every single position, right? The Mordechai quotes the Nohevsik position. Give me a 4th position that comes up in Rishonim. The 2nd position in the Mordechai. What does Yachid Koreotam mean? And by the way, grammatically, right? So far we have, right? Yachid either means, right? The psukim are read together as a yechida, as a unit. Or they're read distinct from the rest of the Torah. They're read by one person, right? Or they're read by Yachid Lumat Sibur, that's the Rambam. Right, what is the 2nd day in the Mordechai? There he is.
Where he said, he seems to suggest that you can't have somebody up there reading with you.
Good. So he says Yachid means one versus two. Right? Not one versus two Aliyot, not this as opposed to the rest of the Torah, not a Yachid versus Tzibur, but one versus two. Right? So he says, let's look at Tosfos. So he says, one second. Right. Harav Rabbeinu Mishulam Hayam Mifaresh Lemu'ute Shlo Yikra Shatz Emo. Right? Normally you have a... Right? You can at least, if you want, have a Balkore and an Ole. Right? You didn't have to. You could always have someone read himself. Here, you cannot. Right? You cannot. Only one person reads, not two. He says, V'kasher l'Rabbeinu Tam. D'mei Chachamim lo haya rigilut sheyesayet shliach tzibur l'kore b'Torah. Right? He says he has a historical problem with this, which is, in the time of the Gemara there was no Balkore, and therefore the phrase cannot mean that. Right? And therefore he follows Rashi instead. Right? Ella keni kark moshe peirash bekuntres. Lefugish lekruzach hazeh otam shmoneh psukim kemo dalet zeh vedalet zeh ohe zeh vegimol zeh. And then he says, this has nothing to do with having a Balkore. Why do we have a Balkore? What does he say? Shalom? Right, not to embarrass people. Right, to not to embarrass people. And then he gives others examples from the Gemara when we do things not to embarrass people. Okay, so leaving for a moment, Rabbeinu Tam has a pretty good historical claim here, which is that can't mean what the Gemara means because there was no such thing as a Balkore.
There's also another source that quotes another Gemara that says that have two people.
Okay, good. But now why would Rabbeinu Meshulam... But now let's just try to understand Rabbeinu Meshulam for a minute. Why does Rabbeinu Meshulam think that these eight psukim should be read by one person and not two? Like at the same time. Those are the words. Good. Now conceptually, now justify it, right? Right? Linguistically, I know where you can get that from. But conceptually, why would you say that? I'm just guessing here, but why would you say that? Yeah.
You know, with the rest of the Torah, we say the Kadosh Baruch Hu Omer Umoshe Omer Vikotev, right? That God would dictate and then Moshe would repeat it back, but for the last Sugim, when Moshe is writing the Dema, then he's not repeating the words back.
Thank you, right? I think Rabbeinu Meshulam is probably driven by another mimic Svara, which is the rest of the Torah always had two people talking, right? Or two talking, God and Moshe, right? This one doesn't, right? And therefore, again, it may be that for him, you can't have two people because that was the uniqueness of the last eight psukim, is they were said only by God, and Moshe did not verbalize them, right?
There's one thing when he said that there was Moshe like wrote it down.
Oh, for sure.
Right, which would mean that there are two people inputting.
Right, or you, and if Yeshua, how do we know, right? Maybe Yeshua, or maybe Yeshua wrote it and God did say it to him.
Right.
We don't know. You're right. There are a lot of problems with Rabbeinu Meshulam, and right, that's why he's pretty much rejected. But just to, I think what he's coming, I think what motivates him, even if in the end we don't agree because there's too many problems with it, is this idea that the rest of the Torah, the experience was God and Moshe saying it together. And this is not that, right? Now that's four. Right? There was one more. Right? One more. There are several more, but let's go with the fifth in the Rishonim. And Rabbeinu Tam rejects this for a series of reasons. Correct. Number five. What's the fifth understanding of Yachid Karei Otam? Right, this one appears in the Mordechai. Did anyone get to it? So the second day in the Mordechai, if you look, this is on page two, look at the hand. If you just want to look at that one line, right? What does he say? Vani shamati Yachid tamid chacham. Yachid doesn't mean one person, it doesn't mean one as opposed to a community, it doesn't mean by itself, it means hamiyuchad, right? The one, not one, the one, right? Which is a Talmud Chacham should read it. Now, lo kol rotzeh la'asod atzmo yachid v'hayam u'gan l'krot hagadol kodem ha'kachadanu menu, etc. It says, because sometimes you find that in the Gemara the word yachid means the special person. What is the problem with this conceptually? Well, that's a practical problem. I don't know. Someone who knows Kolotar Kulabalpe and has analyzed it all. I don't know. Okay, fine. If you're in, you were in Sholder Bavadi, you're safe. Okay, whatever. I don't know. Fine. Okay. Not so many people. You're in Sholder of Asher Weiss. Okay. I don't know. You give him Chasan Terra, right? What's the problem? What's the big problem that everybody has? And even if you haven't seen it inside, you tell me, what's the problem with the Mordechai? With this position?
Well, there's a position that Yeshua wrote it, and how could you have somebody higher?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Darius, right? Everyone's problem is, wait a second, whoa. The Gemara is trying to explain why these eight psukim are less than the rest of the Torah, right? How can you possibly conclude from that someone more special has to read them? That does not fit.
Maybe it's because they are less.
Perfect. Perfect. And Daniel gives the explanation, which is? Correct. Correct. And Daniel highlights the defense of it, which is to say, maybe, you're right, they're lesser. So why do we have the Talmud Chacham do it? Because they're lesser, but they're not nothing. Right? And if you give it to, you just give it to someone, right? If you give it to a regular person, they'll say, those are the psukim that Yeshua wrote, right? But if you give it to Talmud Chacham, they'll say, oh, but it's still chashuv, right? If you make sure to give chasan Torah always to the rabbi, so then everyone will say, okay, maybe the Yeshua wrote them, but they're still special, right? It's overcompensation, right? That's what it is. You're overcompensating, right? In a chanami, you're overcompensating. Most people don't like that, by the way, because that's a bit weird, right? But that is the five main positions that appear in Rishonim. So let's, who's going to be brave and summarize again the five positions that we saw to explain Yachid? Good, Daniel, go.
Rashi says you shouldn't have children.
Good, and how do we justify that conceptually? I don't split up the psukim into two aliyot. Why? Okay, someone want to help him? Right, how do you justify Rashi?
Well, because they're not, they're different from all the other ones, so you can't treat them the same.
Well, no, it's not Rashi.
It's one
unit. Right, they're connected to each other, right? Meaning their difference also makes them one thematic unit, right? Now, what you just said is the Shittim Mubetzet, right? Which is, don't read them with the other Aliyot because they are conceptually different from the rest of the Torah. That's one and two. What are the other three? Gavi, you can say the Rambam again.
That you can read them out of
Minyan. Read them out of Minyan, and why, how do you justify that conceptually?
Because...
Right, linguistically is easy. Yachid versus Tzibur, right? Yeah, how would you justify conceptually?
Because they're on a lower level.
And they're, so one is just to say they're lower, or to say,
as far as read on a communal.
Yeah, that the Torah was originally, right, given communally, and therefore must be read communally to recreate that. But this was given in a different way. It was privately. He wasn't, right? Good. That's three. Now four and five. Rabbeinu Meshulam is. Right, only one person reads it, which is has a host of problems with it, right? Which is that they didn't have a shlich, they didn't have a Baal Korei in that time. But again, conceptually, you sort of understand that this one was only said by God, not by Moshe. There weren't two beings talking. And the fifth is the overcompensation svara, right? Which is Yachid, means the most chashuv person, right? The Talmud Chacham, which is a bit weird because the point is that these eight psukim are less. Okay. So very quickly, halachically, which of these are accepted? Right, which of these get accepted lahalacha? So, Rashi Duvet is correct, right? That Shulchan Aruch accepts the position that you do not split it into two units, right? Sorry, that's Rashi. Right, Rashi. You don't split it into two units. Now there is. Well, now ironically, which minhag got accepted, even though it is the least halachically justifiable of the five positions, that a chashuv person gets it, right? Those seem to be the two that have resonance in the halacha, right? Is primarily the position that's accepted is Rashi, that we read it as one aliyah, that we don't split them from each other, right? Do we link the last eight psukim to the rest of the Torah? Absolutely. Our last aliyah is Ma'ona Eloi Kedem. Right? So we don't accept that position, right? We read it as more than an eight pasuk aliyah. Right? But we do actually, the minhag has become that we... It's what we call Chasan Torah. Right? That we make a big deal about who gets the last eight psukim. Right? So the minhag does seem to be that we went in the direction of the Mordechai, which is ironic. Right? Now, Me'ikra Din, we don't accept it. It's not like you have to give it to a Talmud Chacham, but the minhag has developed. Right? And this is what the... this is what the Mishnah Brura points out. Right? That even though, technically, even a katan can be oled, right? This is not a bigger, this is actually lesser. Right? Is that anybody can read it. Right? Even a child can read it. Right? On Simchas Torah, we give everybody aliyot. Right? The minhag, which again, not halachic, right, is very weak halachically, is to paskin like the Mordechai as well, right, which is to give an important person what we call chasan Torah, or chatan Torah. Yeah. Correct, but we don't. We're right. Again, it's for him. It just sounds like, look, in the end of the day, these are lesser, so we need to overcompensate, right? I mean, that's the only way I can justify it, right? It's
no. Besides the top of the top, right? If we said it's lesser, then that would seem to be following
Moshe. Not necessarily, right? Because it could be that, right? That's the Gemara's conclusion, that even if you think Moshe wrote it, he wrote it differently, right? So it's still, yeah, exactly. And therefore, we didn't repeat it. Right, that was what we talked about yesterday. Was it just the tears, or is it the fact that he didn't verbalize it? Right, but either way, there's something lacking. Okay. Right. It sounds like that they are. Rather, they are in some way connected to each other. Right, you don't split up a eulogy or something like that. Right.
Why don't you start from the beginning?
Why don't we possibly? I don't know, right? We just don't, right? Apparently, we don't think that they are so distinct that they cannot be read as part of a broader unit, right? Now, that's right. That seems to be conceptually what hangs on this, is that we think, no, you can read Mona Eloi Kedem and keep reading it, right? Like, it's not so different from the rest of the Torah that it can't, right? It can't be part of the single Aliyah, right? We just don't think, right? Halachically, we don't accept that. Now, the Rambam is quoted by certain poskim. Now, again, Me'ikra Din, we don't really paskin like the Mordechai. The Chacham Tzvi notes this, right? The Chacham Tzvi notes this. Again, if you get a chance to look at it, great. If not, don't worry about it, right? There are some extra sources here for reading. The Chacham Tzvi was faced with with the following question, right? It was an interesting question, but he had someone in his community who converted out to Islam and then did tshuva and converted back in, and they wanted to give him Chasan Torah, right? Probably, according to Moshe, but he came back, right? Well, when he was a Muslim, he didn't come to shul on a regular basis. Now he left Islam and he's a practicing Jew again. And they wanted to give him, Chasan Torah. And there were people in shul who said, "How can you give Chasan Torah to him? Right? You have to give it to a Talmud Chacham, not a person who just recently stopped being a practicing Muslim, right?" And what did he say? He said, "We don't really paskin that way." Right? Meaning, not weighing in on whether you should or should give him the Aliyah, but there's no technical problem giving him Chasan Torah, right? Because we don't really paskin like the Mordechai. And he says, besides, right, why did they want to give him the Aliyah? Because he was now a good member of society, he was a Baal Tshuva, and they wanted to make a point that, you know, no matter what you do, you can come back. And he's like, "That's a good message. I like that." Right? He's a Baal Tshuva, right? Don't try to shun him. Like, he made a big mistake. No one's denying that. He was practicing another religion for a bit. Right? That's not what we like doing, but that doesn't mean he can't get Aliyot, even Chashav Aliyot. Like, he's saying, like, the fact that we give Chasan Torah to an important person, like, that's just a minhag. That's not really the real halachic interpretation that we accept, is that this can't be broken into two aliyot. That's it.
Wait, but so the reason given by the Mordechai
He's saying the fact that the minhag emerged that we give chasen Torah to a chashev person is not really halacha. It's a minhag. It's fine. No, it's the Mordechai Paskin that way. The Chacham Tzvi is not saying what the Mordechai Paskin. He's saying which of these are accepted. Which of the five are accepted la halacha? So the one that's accepted la halacha is that you can't break it up into two aliyah, right? We don't accept the position la halacha that it can't be. It has to be read as a separate aliyah because we don't. No, not like Kedem. No. He's just saying in this particular case, the reason that chasen Torah is given to a chashev person is not because we paskin like the Mordechai. We don't, right? The fact that our minhag happens to be similar to that which the Mordechai thought was the halacha, right, doesn't prove that we really paskin that way, right? So he says, therefore, don't worry about it too much. It's not really halacha, right? Meaning the Mordechai thought it was halacha, but he said we don't paskin like the Mordechai, right? Correct. So now the halacha. Again, usually, we also don't, right? We try not to pass like the Rambam, right? Meaning, hence that announcement. Please make sure there is a minyan when you are laning, right? We try not to pass like the Rambam here, to not have a minyan, right? The one that is recorded lalacha, again, is that we don't split it up into two units, right? We don't read it as its own aliyah, we don't. Right, we're not really makbid that should be a Talmud Chacham. Right, we do have a Bal Kore, hence we don't paskin like Rabbi and Meshulam. Right, that's three. What am I missing? We do read it. Right, we don't break it up in the middle. That we do paskin that way. What was the fifth? What did I miss? Which one did I not say?
Shita Mekabatzos.
We do read it with the other aliyahs. We don't paskin that way. Right, with other pesukim, we don't split it up. We do paskin that way. We sometimes give it to a halacha chacham, but only midin minag. Right, we try to have a minyan. Oh, we do have a bal kore. No, I got all five. That was five. That's five. There we go. Five. Okay, good. That is. Fine. That is all five, and that is how it shakes out la halacha. What? Bishas atchak. You might be able to baskin like the Rambam, right? There are, and some of the achronim do bring this up. Oh, right. Sorry. Is there another way of justifying the Mordechai? Not that it's overcompensation. So here's a radical read. I don't like it, but if you look at page 7 in the Hagyon Halacha, he suggests something. Again, I really don't like what I'm about to say, but for intellectual completeness, I will mention it. He actually says maybe the reason you have a Talmud Chacham doing it is not because it's a lower level, but because in a certain sense it's a higher level. How is it a higher level? So he says, because the rest of the Torah was said by God and Moshe, these Epsukim are only said by God. Yachid. Ha Yachid. Right? And therefore, this person has to mimic only God and nobody else. And there's something unique about that. I don't buy it. I don't like it. But take your pick. That's how he understands the Abarbanel. Yeah. Maybe, but it's not quite suvim. It's there is one more perish that doesn't appear in the Rishonim. The Rashash suggests that what it means is that you shouldn't read it twice. Right? Like, you know how we have a million aliyot and Simchat Torah? Right? Don't do that for the last Yipsukim, which is, by the way, how we, right, we don't, right? And we read all of them until Chasen Torah, and then we just read Chasen Torah once, right? So that's how he understands this. It's a very hard read. But that happens to be how he reads it. It yes, I agree with you. It's a very hard read. I just, again, intellectual completeness, the Rosh Hashta say this, that that's what it means. Yeah. Okay, apparently Ray Salvechik also suggested that the reason Moshe is sort of crying, Videma, is because he doesn't get to teach this publicly, which maybe sort of works with some of the things we're saying. I don't know if that's true, but again, throwing that out there. But fundamentally, we have now surveyed the five positions here. So if we just track what we've done the last 3 days, let me summarize in 1 minute, right? First, we justified how we got to the problem here, right? Then we dealt with what does the claim actually mean? What does Bidema mean? And today we dealt with the halachic implications, right? And justify them conceptually, right? Those are day 1, 2, 3. Tomorrow we will now, and this will take us either 1 or 2 days, right? Then go beyond this, which is, okay, let's go back to the theological claim, right? Which is that Moshe might not have written the last 8 psukim, right? And see, can that, should that at all be expanded, or should we limit it, right, to only what Chazal said, right? And that's where we get into a little bit of dangerous ground with Ibn Ezra or more. That'll be tomorrow. I'll give you a different source sheet for that. Are we clear so far what we did, right? How we built this sugya up, right? The 3 stages, yes? Good. Shkoyach, guys? I'm fine.